The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, my name is Naomi Lambert from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will share articles with you from The Assembly, which publishes in-depth reporting on North Carolina at theassemblync.com. Today we're starting with an article entitled WRAL-TV Fights to Succeed in a New Media World. The article is by Chloe Courtney Bull and dates from September 29th. Television viewership and advertising revenue are down nationally, and locally owned stations are fading. Jimmy Goodman, the fourth generation president of Capital Broadcasting, confronts a precarious future. Posted above the double door entryway to WRAL-TV's Raleigh headquarters is a quote from founder A.J. Fletcher: "To inform the public without bias or favour is this station's highest duty." Behind those doors is a warren of conference rooms, studios, control rooms, and a large open-plan newsroom. James Goodman Jr., the fourth generation president of WRAL and its family-owned parent company, Capital Broadcasting, strides down hallways filled with plaques and memorabilia, commemorating the station's impact on local journalism. Inside the main control room, he looks on as a group of producers seated before an array of 15 monitors speak calmly but rapidly into their headsets, executing the complicated minute-by-minute choreography that is the 4 p.m. news. Next door in the studio, he watches as a pair of anchors prepare to go live, a breaking news banner scrolling across the screen in front of their desk. A few minutes later, and one floor down, Goodman Jr. sits at a long conference table and absent-mindedly rakes his hands across his face, pushing his rectangular glasses onto his forehead. "I'm really proud of what you saw up there, and I don't really care if other people think that or not," he says, letting out an exhale somewhere between a wry laugh and an expression of defiance. He speaks about the family business in epic terms. "This is a war," he told the Assembly in a recent interview. "This is a battle that we're fighting every day." Goodman Jr. is battling for advertising dollars against bigger, richer competitors. He's fighting to hold his audience's attention amid stiff competition from social media, streaming services, and AI-generated Google search results. And he's in a race against time, trying to predict the next trends and technological advancements in media to keep his station profitable and relevant. Much has been written about the death of print news in the digital age, but the business model for local TV news is breaking too. Viewership has steadily declined since 2016, according to data from the Pew Research Center. And advertising revenue has trended down as well, notwithstanding bumps from political ads during election years. Profit margins are slimmer than they were 30 years ago, to the point where the vast majority of local stations have been bought up by a handful of corporations. Of the local ABC, NBC and CBS affiliates in the nation's top 25 biggest media markets, Raleigh is number 22, NBC affiliate WRAL is the only one that isn't owned by a corporate parent like Sinclair, Tegna, Nexstar or Disney. The last 5 years have thrown additional hurdles in WRAL's path, including a transition to a new chief executive and a string of high-profile departures from the newsroom and anchor desk. There have been casualties in Goodman Jr.'s big battle. Long-time employees who say they were laid off or offered steeply reduced contracts, and others who left the station abruptly and without explanation. They say WRAL is losing some of the family culture that distinguished it from corporate-owned competitors and helped keep viewers loyal. Asked about the departures, Goodman Jr. said some staffers have been resistant to change. "This isn't a kindergarten," he said. "In order to succeed, you gotta adapt, you gotta change. And you can either embrace that and become curious, which is what we want to do, or you can resist it. We've probably been overly considerate as it relates to overlooking those that have been resistant over time. In spite of the headwinds, WRAL is still relatively well positioned. It has a newsroom staff of 143 and a host of profitable companies under the Capital Broadcasting umbrella to cushion the TV station against financial stumbles. The station does consequential political and investigative reporting, and it regularly wins coveted regional Emmy and Murrow awards. Its role as a public good has never been clearer as other local news sources shrink and disappear. WRAL makes its own decisions and to some extent controls its destiny. Sinclair and Nexstar recently told their more than 60 affiliate ABC affiliate stations, including WXLV and WCTI, not to air Jimmy Kimmel Live after the host's comments about Charlie Kirk's death. Goodman Jr. has no faraway corporate boss to answer to. Nexstar and Sinclair said Friday they were bringing Kimmel back. WRAL is, both in terms of its record through the years doing news and its economics, atypical of the whole university of local stations, said Rick Edmonds, a media business analyst for the Poynter Institute, a non-profit journalism organisation. Very few are that dominant in a market, and very few have as big a commitment, at least historically, to doing some pretty ambitious news. The business model may be changing underfoot, but Goodman Jr., 48, who's better known around the station as Jimmy, is sanguine about WRAL's prospects. "I really want Capital Broadcasting to be doing local news in Raleigh 100 years from now," he said. "I don't know what that means. I don't know what device it'll be on. I don't know if it'll be here or Mars. But at the end of the day, when the dust settles, if we're not here, they'll find me with my knuckles broken." Prescient bets. Fletcher, who founded Capital Broadcasting Company, was Goodman Jr.'s great-grandfather. He began amassing local media properties in the 1930s with the purchase of an AM radio station. In 1956, he branched into television, securing the license to Channel 5 and founding WRAL-TV. By the time of Fletcher's death in 1979, CBC also owned the Tobacco Radio Network, the North Carolina News Network, Capital Publications, Capital Broadcasting Network, and Seaberg Music Library, Inc. Fletcher also had an eponymous charitable foundation and a slate of broadcasting awards to his name. He was succeeded as CBC president in 1966 by his eldest son, Fred, who, in addition to serving as president of CBC until his retirement, was a community fixture in Raleigh. He was elected to the city council and chaired various Wake County Parks boards for decades. James Fletcher Goodman Sr., Fred's nephew, took over as president of Capital Broadcasting in 1975. Goodman Sr. made prescient bets on emerging technologies. WRAL was the first TV station in North Carolina to get a news helicopter in 1979 and a satellite truck in 1984, the first in the Triangle to launch a website, 1996, and the first in the world to air an all-high-definition newscast, the 5 p.m. news on October 13, 2000. They were possibly the leading station in the entire country, certainly one of a handful, that was very aggressive in moving to digital outputs, said Lee Meredith, an adjunct instructor at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill's Hussman School of Journalism and Media, and former general manager of several TV stations around the Southeast. WRAL's early move to digital involved a substantial investment that Goodman's corporate counterparts, motivated by their bottom lines, were reluctant to make. Back then, every local TV station just made money hand over fist and tried not to give any to their employees if they didn't have to, recalled Ed Crump, who joined WTVD ABC 11 as a reporter in 1984 and stayed for 37 years. One of the biggest pros of local ownership is a focus on serving this community, he said. They can decide how much profit they're going to make and how much service they're going to provide. In a big company, that's not going to be a local decision. The investment's paid off. Under Goodman Senior, the station was widely lauded as the best in the region, beating out its neighbours WTVD, ABC 11, and WNCN, CBS 17. We may have been breaking the same story, but more people were watching WRAL, and that was a fact, said Dwayne Ballon, a sports anchor for Channel 11 in the 1980s and 90s. Also, during Goodman Senior's tenure as CBC president, the company bought the Durham Bulls minor league baseball team, sprouted a real estate division, and developed Durham's abandoned American Tobacco factory campus into a multi-use district. Jimmy's brother, Michael, runs the company's real estate and sports divisions. The elder Goodman wanted Jimmy to learn every part of the broadcasting business he would one day lead. So in the 1990s, Jimmy started working as a camera operator for WRAL's 5 a.m. newscast. He was 16 years old. From there, Goodman Jr. bounced between different areas of CBC's increasingly vast network of businesses, managing a handful of radio stations, acquiring new properties for the company, and leading CBC's new media group. In 2017, he became president and COO of CBC. This May, he officially took over the CEO title from his father, who continues to serve as chairman of CBC's board of directors. "Dad, to me, is the GOAT," Goodman Jr. said, using the acronym for Greatest of All Time. "Everything I learned about what we're up to comes from him. He sort of lives rent-free in my mind and heart all the time." But Goodman Jr. is operating in a different media landscape than his father. The generation of TV watchers who tuned in like clockwork for WRAL's evening news is aging. Younger people are much more likely to get their news from websites, apps, and social media than television, according to Pew data. "Our audiences are changing so fast," Goodman Jr. said. "It's definitely become a more complex business in order to serve those needs." In 1995, WRAL broadcast 4 hours of local news each day. Today, that number has ballooned to 11 hours across WRAL and WRAZ, the local Fox affiliate that Capital Broadcasting also owns. Then there's WRAL News Plus, a 24/7 streaming channel that provides continual news and weather updates, not to mention the mobile app, website, and multiple radio stations pumping out their own feeds of local news. More local news sounds great on its face, but there are a couple of potential problems with this strategy. For one, WRAL is still an advertising-based company, and digital advertising is far less profitable than TV advertising. Meredith called it trading analog dollars for digital dimes. Plus, WRAL doesn't seem to have expanded its reporting staff in proportion to its new multi-platform endeavours. The station would not tell the Assembly how staffing levels have changed in the last decade, but former employees say they watched their departments shrink, even as they were asked to produce more. Goodman Jr. pushed back against the idea that recent departures at WRAL are anything more than the usual churn all companies experience. "We've had a lot of people who have left in my tenure. How I would compare that to now is, it's the exact same as it's always been," he said. Former staff tell a different story. The Assembly spoke to several long-time employees who said they were laid off or offered steeply reduced contracts. Others said they saw the writing on the wall and left of their own accord for new opportunities. They said the station feels less like a family and more like a business than ever before. Nothing irregular in the competitive world of local broadcasting, but a departure from the WRAL of decades past. High-profile departures. Earlier this month, Laura Leslie, WRAL's Capital Bureau Chief, announced she was leaving the station to become the new editor of NC Newsline, a Raleigh-based non-profit news site. Leslie spent nearly 15 years at WRAL and became one of North Carolina's most authoritative voices on state politics. She declined to comment to the Assembly about why she decided to make the move, but wrote in an announcement that at a time when so many traditional media outlets are shrinking, State's Newsroom is expanding its coverage of policy debates that affect readers' everyday lives. She added that she's grateful to WRAL for the opportunity the station gave me and the many skills I learned during my time there. Following Leslie's announcement, WRAL News Director Mike Friedrich told the News and Observer, "She has been an important contributor for several years, but we are proud of our NC Capital team already in place." Some WRAL veterans considered that disrespectful to Leslie. Leslie is not the only recent high-profile departure. In March, visual design director Shan Zhong, a 37-time regional Emmy Award winner, left after almost 19 years. He did not respond to a request for comment. Enterprise executive producer Ashley Talley also left in March. She too declined a request for comment. Talley oversaw Murrow and Emmy Award-winning work during her nearly 6 years at WRAL and now works for Tegna. Anchors Julian Grace and Aaron Thomas both departed the station abruptly this summer after each worked there for 6 years. Thomas did not respond to a request for comment but has taken an anchor reporter job at WLWT in Cincinnati. Grace told the Assembly that when his contract with WRAL ended in June, he decided to take a break from journalism to promote his new book. News anchor Deborah Morgan, a 32-year newsroom veteran, also left WRAL this summer and did not respond to the Assembly's inquiries about why and what's next for her. Beloved lead anchor David Crabtree, 19-year news director Rick Gall, politics reporter Travis Fain, reporting veteran Amanda Lamb, and general manager Joel Davis all moved on for new opportunities or retired within the last 2 years. Although they left by choice, Crabtree was 72 years old when he left to become CEO at PBS North Carolina. Their colleagues said the loss of institutional memory is a blow for the station, whose staff is leaning younger and less experienced. Gilbert Byers reported from Fayetteville for 17 years until late 2024, when he was told his contract wasn't being renewed. "They had every right to do that. I had 17 great years with them," Byers said. "I'm sure WRAL and WTVD and WNCN, everyone is making adjustments right now. That may seem shocking, but it really shouldn't be." Ari Woodhouse, an associate producer who started at WRAL in 2023, resigned in April 2024 to take a broadcasting job in Charlotte at Queen City News. "In all the newsrooms I've ever worked in," she said, "you will see somebody one day and then you'll come in the next day and there's an email saying this person is no longer with the company." Still, Woodhouse found the departures at WRAL jarring. "They got rid of all our administration at the front desk," she said, "and a few other people that I wasn't exactly close with, but it was definitely felt when they left because their responsibilities fall on other people. It definitely led to people being overworked." Six former employees requested anonymity to speak candidly with the Assembly. Almost universally, they acknowledge that WRAL is up against the same headwinds as the entire TV news industry and that turnover is normal. But they express discomfort that long-time employees were leaving against their will, or in some cases, without giving any explanation to the staff. Asked about the departures, Goodman Jr. was adamant that we haven't made any mistakes and that the few times WRAL has terminated a contract, it was for cause. He also said that the news team has grown compared to 10 years ago. When the Assembly visited WRAL recently for a newsroom tour, rain was slanting down in sheets outside. Severe weather means a busy day of breaking news. WRAL has 7 meteorologists and live updates for the news team, and the building was humming with activity. Goodman Jr. dressed unfussily in khakis and a navy Durham Bulls branded polo shirt, traded greetings with camera operators and producers as he loped down long corridors past banks of monitors. he stopped to point out a shiny new piece of tech, an automatic teleprompter that learns individual anchors' speech patterns and customizes the pace of its scroll. Back in the day, Goodman Jr. used to operate a manual version of the teleprompter during live newscasts. That position that I was in isn't here anymore. We don't have a teleprompter operator anymore, he said. But think about all the things that we're doing now that we weren't doing. In one studio space, a reporter in a suit and a teenage camera operator in a headset were filming a traffic report. After they finished, Goodman Jr. ambled up to the operator and started ribbing him. It looked a little bit shaky in that last shot, he teased. The young camera operator was none other than Goodman Jr.'s eldest son, Fletcher, who is 16. The presumptive heir to the Capital Broadcasting Empire blushed as his dad leaned in for an awkward forehead kiss. There's nobody who wants things not to change more than me, Goodman Jr. said later that day. However, I also realised very early in life that that's like talking about unicorns. Everything is going to change. Our next article from the Assembly is Why Queen's and Elon Are Merging. The deal will provide Queen's University of Charlotte with stable financial backing and Elon University with improved access to Charlotte's growing business opportunities. In the fall of 2022, Elon University President Connie Book stepped foot on the campus of Queen's University of Charlotte for the first time. Book was there to meet with Queen's then-president Daniel Lugo and tell him that Elon was going to open a law school campus in Charlotte's South End. She was impressed with Queen's Georgian Revival architecture and brick facades and its wide and grassy open areas. I walked around that day and I thought, it's so Elon-like, she recalled. In the next few years, Queen's could become a lot more Elon-like, following the announcement Tuesday that the two schools, both founded in the 1800s, are merging. At an event on Queen's campus, Book and acting Queen's president, Jesse Curitan, described the merger as building on the strengths of each institution. Queen's gets a larger partner with more resources, while Elon gains a foothold in a major metropolitan area. This is a win for Elon, a win for Queen's, and a win for Charlotte, said Chris Marsicano, a higher education scholar at Davidson College. Many of the details of the merger, including the name and specifics of academic programs, will be decided in the coming years, following conversations with consultants, accreditors, regulators, and faculty at both campuses, the leader said. But Elon comes to the deal on a much stronger financial footing than its new partner, and it will control most of the merged entity's board seats. Though Queen's has a significant presence in the Charlotte area, it is struggling financially. Many small private schools across the country are grappling with weak enrollment as more Americans question the value of a college degree, and federal funding cuts are creating new pressures for many schools. Queen's has been running significant deficit budgets in the past decade, said college finance consultant Gary Stocker. Its operating expenses have grown 26% in the last decade, while operating revenues grew just 5%, he said. Enrollment has been falling from almost 2,500 in 2019 to 1,850 in 2023. Yet the university has a higher number of employees making over $100,000 than its peer institutions. This is not a growth opportunity for Queen's, Stocker said. It's a survival move. Elon, on the other hand, has been thriving over the past 15 years, despite an increase in this year's freshman class. But its location in Alamance County limits its growth. Elon has grown rapidly, has continued its meteoric rise, and is now in a position where it's really trying to decide, does it want to be this sort of very strong undergraduate teaching organization that it has always been, Marsicano said. Does it need to extend beyond Burlington, North Carolina? Elon has unequivocally stated yes. Marsicano said Charlotte is not only one of the fastest growing regions in the country, but it has a population ripe for the kind of graduate programs Elon offers. There are more people with bachelor's degrees but not graduate degrees than just about any other city in America, Mascano said. Elon has already been making moves in Charlotte with the opening of a satellite law school campus in the bustling South End area last year. But the merger opens additional opportunities for partnerships with businesses in fields such as healthcare and tech. Who's the boss? Although the two university presidents described the strength of both institutions and spoke warmly of a collegial partnership, it's clear that the Elon side of the merger will be in charge. Book told reporters that Elon's 37-member board will expand to add 10 members from the Queen's side. That means that Elon will control nearly 80% of the merged entity's board seats. Charlotte business titan Hugh McColl Jr., the 90-year-old former CEO of Bank of America and a member of Queen's board, indicated that Book would be in charge after the merger. "This is going to turn out to be one of the most important things that's ever happened in this city, and it's in your hands, young lady," he said, gesturing to Book. Cureton, a former banking and healthcare executive, stepped in as Queen's acting president in July after the departure of Lugo, who left to become president of Trinity College in Connecticut. Cureton said Tuesday he would stay as long as he needed to. Like most universities, Elon and Queen's are organized as non-profits. When non-profits combined, there is no financial transaction. They just merge the boards and the assets. Book downplayed the idea that Elon would take the lead. "I do believe that it is a merger of equals, in that it is two unique strengths that are coming together, and that's what we're focused on today," she said. "We're grateful to have this opportunity, and I think Queen's recognizes they need Elon for their own future too. More resources and more partnerships." Cureton said the merger is attractive because it could bring more resources to the Charlotte campus and its students. "It gives Queen's an opportunity to partner with a very solid, financially stable university and allow us to continue to invest not only in our campus, but to invest in graduate programs that we can elevate here in this community to better partner with the business community." Book said she's excited about the opportunity to link Elon's academics with Charlotte's businesses. She said she recently met with biomedical companies about opportunities for Elon's engineering students, and she'd like to apply Elon's strength in artificial intelligence to Queen's Business School. And that's all we have time for. This article was written by Tony Mesia. We've run out of time for today's episode of The Assembly. We hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to tune in next time. I'm Naomi Lambert for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is now available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138.